This is the Medic Cast, July 26th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medic Cast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. I want to remember and remind all of you brand new listeners, because we have a bunch of you coming on board this time of year as you're gearing up for your semester beginning of your EMS programs, or for those of you that have discovered the show as you're moving into the fall. You know, at the end of the summer here, we pick up a lot of new listeners. So I want to remind everybody that over at the MedicCast blog are all the additional resources you need to make the MedicCast show really come alive. Additional tip resources for any of our tip segments are available in the show notes for each episode. The news links to everything we talk about, all available over at MedicCast.com/blog. So if you haven't taken an opportunity to head over there and check out the MedicCast blog, you should definitely do so. You'll find articles of news items and things put up throughout the course of each week, additional resource links to information for students and other information about other online resources for EMS, and of course the show notes link right at the top of the page. So you can click on that and you'll see a chronological listing of all of the episodes of the MedicCast, starting with the most recent episode and going back in reverse chronological order, so you can find the episode you're looking for and then click on that link and follow up on the additional resources. So I just want to remind you that all's available for you there. Of course, you can also sign up for the MedicCast newsletter right there on the front page and get the show notes links and everything sent directly to you by email. And of course, you can always just shoot me an email directly. My email address, podmedic@maca.com. You can always catch up with me with your suggestions, links to news items, corrections. If I've made a mistake, definitely call me on it so I can get the information corrected and out to the MedicCast community in the next episode. All of that is part of your job as a member of the MedicCast community, so make sure you're taking advantage of that. Also, definitely call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342. That's 941-30-MEDIC. I'd love to hear from listeners. Call in on the voicemail line with a comment about the show, maybe something that occurred to you when you were listening to a tip segment or a news item. I love to hear back your response to these things. And believe it or not, the other listeners really enjoy hearing your perspective too. Heck, they listen to me every week. They love to hear what the other listeners are thinking about. And often, something you've thought of saying is something that's occurred to someone else and they just haven't called in. So don't just assume that something you have is not important. We want to hear from you any way you want to respond to us, whether it's email, voicemail, or just leaving a comment on one of the articles over on the MedicCast site. Also, don't forget, I'm available on Facebook. The MedicCast itself has a fan page there. Go to facebook.com/MedicCast, and you can click the like button right there at the top of the page, and it will make you a fan of the MedicCast, and you can get additional things. I sometimes put up early episodes over there, additional videos, and little additional quizzes, surveys, polls of information. So it's a great way to share back. I just had a great discussion over there. If you haven't checked it recently, if you scroll down a little bit, because I'll probably be down a few posts, but a great discussion and ideas about monitoring capabilities and things having to do with cardiac arrest, defibrillation, and heart monitors. So I asked the question, what you wanted to hear, and I got like 14 replies back just in a short period of time of people checking back in to tell me what they wanted to learn more about. And you should definitely check that post out. And that's all available at the MedicCast fan page. Again, facebook.com/MedicCast. Also, you can find me personally on Twitter and Facebook under the handle Podmedic. So facebook.com/Podmedic and twitter.com/Podmedic. All these great ways to catch up with me. What else can you do? Well, of course, you can send me those emails and I will answer those emails back and sometimes here on the show. So let's jump on in and get into our listener email segment. So time now for our listener email. And I will kick off our listener email segment with an email I got from listener Godfrey down in New Zealand. And he was checking in to find out about maybe starting his own podcast down in New Zealand. And, you know, Godfrey, I think this is a great way to give back to your EMS community and to the world EMS community, because we really don't know enough about how each other's systems operate. So I've helped other people get their shows started. Paul Bond over in Emergency Nursing Today. There's just several people that I've helped get their shows moving, and I'd be happy to help anybody that's interested in starting their own show, just kind of giving you some pointers on how to get started. So I'm helping Godfrey out. Maybe he can get his show together and think about what he wants to talk about. And it's certainly an opportunity to learn about his EMS system and the things that are going on there and what they find important. So I'm looking forward to what he comes up with. And when that happens, we'll make sure that we link back to it here on the MedicCast, because I think that that's an important thing to do. Godfrey, great to hear from you. And I hope that you will continue to work on this project and move forward and find a way that, you know, that we can balance the time constraints. Because I think he was a little shocked when I told him how long it really takes to put out a show based on the amount of time and the length of the actual show. It's actually a lot longer. I know the MedicCast can take me eight to 10 hours a week sometimes to prepare the information, edit, and gather the resources and links and things, and then to record the show, edit the show, and to get it all posted. It takes a good bit of time. So it's a labor of love. I want to thank you all for supporting our sponsors over the last couple of years and continue to do so. It's one of the things that we do to help make sure the MedicCast comes out to you free of charge, is to help alleviate some of the costs involved with putting the show out. So, Godfrey, I hope that we can help you get that squared away on your end, too. And hopefully we'll have a brand new EMS show coming out of New Zealand. And we can talk about it here on the MedicCast. Next up in the listener email, over on Facebook, I actually picked up a discussion talking about some national EMS movements. And then I got an email in from listener Chris. And Chris was checking in with a couple of different national EMS movements, talking about the advocatesforems.org, and of course before that the National Council for EMS. So what are we looking at for these particular situations? Well, I think that the EMS movement here in the United States, and indeed a lot of the world, really needs a voice, a centralized voice. We don't have that in EMS. We have a couple of organizations that represent us in various ways, but do we really have a coordinated organization that can come up with a single or a couple of single points that we can all push home and all get behind? I've talked about it here on the show before. We've talked about it on the MedicCast TV weekly commentary. If you aren't watching that, it's a short little video segment I record each week with a just short piece of commentary, kind of me ranting about something in a short format. So you should definitely check out the MedicCast TV weekly commentary. But I've talked about it there and talked about the fact that we don't have that single unified voice and the single unified purpose as an EMS career path and an EMS professional group. What do I mean by that? Well, if you look at the fire service, they're very good at having a national coordinated movement. They here in the United States, they push forward initiatives for building code. You look at the sprinkler systems required in buildings now, and moving on into requiring residential sprinkler systems. We don't have that many house fires, probably because of the changes in building code and upgrading electrical capacity and the way we build things. But part of the reason is that we have all these safety initiatives that have been put forward by organizations like the Fire National Fire Service and their organizations in this country. We look at the Stop, Drop, and Roll campaign, the push for smoke detectors, and of course, residential sprinkler systems. All of these have some expense associated with them, and they are reducing the cost and loss of life and injury to fires in the United States and indeed in other parts of the world. So what are we doing for EMS in the same way? And I think that this is something we can do more of, and I'm looking forward to some of these national movements really trying to work together and come up with a coordinated voice that maybe gets behind something like public access AEDs. In the same way we have sprinklers in every building, why don't we have AEDs in every building. I mean, it's a lot cheaper to put an AED on the wall than it is to put a sprinkler system in and maintain it. So why are we not doing that as well? And it's something that should be considered per every, you know, high-rise buildings should have AEDs on every floor. It's just something that should be considered. And I think that we could push forward this as an initiative. Sure, you know, the building contractors are going to resist it because it's going to be adding additional costs to their buildings, but they're just going to pass that on anyway. But think about it. If we had knew there was an AED on every floor in a department store or in every Walmart across the country with an AED, then a cardiac arrest in that Walmart parking lot means that we can get an AED to that person in just a minute or two, and their survivability goes in way, way up. Why aren't we doing that? I think it's something we can get behind. The same thing with public access CPR education. We should be educating everybody to take CPR classes. We should simplify the education on CPR. And we should educate people that if they've taken CPR, their card may have expired, but it doesn't mean that they can't do good chest compressions and help with the process and initiate CPR. We need to educate people that it's not something you have to be ultimately certified for once you've been trained, if you maintain some information about changes in ratios and different changes in technique, and that can be re-educated through a 30-minute commercial on TV. So we need to teach people that doing something like chest compressions on someone is not rocket science. Anybody who teaches CPR knows that. Why we have to go through a 3-hour, 4-hour process to do that is mind-blowing to me. But that's the way they require me to teach it, so I have to teach it that way. However, I know I can teach CPR adequately, the mechanics of CPR, how to do it well to a group of people in just 20 minutes to a half an hour. If I have enough mannequins for everybody to practice on, we can be in and out very quickly. And we should look at doing that. So I look forward to your comments on this. Certainly something we should be discussing. And Chris, thanks a lot for sharing that email. And let's keep this initiative on the front burner and continue discussing it. Finally, I've been exchanging a bunch of emails. Those of you that follow me on Twitter probably already know this, but have been exchanging bunches of email back and forth with Natalie Quibido and Jeremiah Bush, part of the brand new Mutual Aid TV project. They are basically, Jeremiah is traveling from LA, where he's in a very metropolitan, urban style area, and he's looking for a place to do his paramedic ride-alongs and get his hours in to have his skills done so he can go ahead and have his clinical time and advance to finishing his paramedic program. So Jeremiah, and with the initiative that he showed for this, and he and Natalie both, I just think it's a great idea. He is now in rural Louisiana looking at a completely different system, and they're actually recording their thoughts about how this system is different from what he's used to, how that system works, the system in which Natalie works in rural Louisiana, and it's just a great project. So the initial videos are available now, youtube.com/mutualaidtv. So you should check out that, you should follow it, subscribe to it, and check out the information that they're providing. Let's give them a lot of support, and I will have an interview with the two of them coming up in just a couple of weeks here on the MedicCast, so stay tuned for that. And of course, maybe over on the Facebook fan page, I'll edit some of that interview in a shorter format and put some segments up over there early so you can get some sneak peeks and be ready for that longer segment interview when it comes up here in August in just a few weeks. So great to hear from Natalie and Jeremiah, and I'm really looking forward to this project expanding, and I hope you will check this out as well. And again, that's youtube.com/mutualaidtv, or you can find them over in the community area of the chroniclesofems.com site. Click on the community tab right there at the top, and you'll be able to see a selection of video projects, including my projects, and you'll also see Mutual Aid TV listed there as well. So I'm looking forward to supporting this in the future, and, you know, hey, go guys. I'm looking forward to just every video you crank out. So let's learn about what's going on down there in Natalie's system. Time now to jump into this week's news, and we'll lead off this story with an article I picked up out of the Massachusetts area about two state troopers who delivered a baby alongside the highway. And it just goes to point out, you know, this article is pretty interesting. A woman was on her, it was her third baby. She knew she was in active labor. According to the article here, the troopers contacted emergency services when they found the woman on the side of the road, had called for assistance, and they were the first two on the scene, and the baby was coming, and so they had to step up and do what needed to be done. And this just calls to mind that this is a group effort. And sometimes we talk about the sometimes adversarial relationship we have with police in some jurisdictions. And it's unfortunate that that's the case when it crops up. But I think it's important when we see articles like this to remind ourselves that we are all on the same team, that we're really all out there to protect, to serve, to provide assistance and care and rescue when needed to people. And that is a very similar job responsibility for what we do as an overall description of what we do. You know, yes, the police are involved with, and their training is involved with taking care of more violent situations. And, you know, that's a good thing. They have the training to do that. We have additional training to help us deal with certain extreme medical situations. But certainly, in the end of it, we are all about taking care of people and making our communities a better place, whether that's because we have helped deliver a new baby into our community or whether it's because we have protected our community from a criminal situation. Either way, this is a similar task. And so I want to say kudos to these two. I think Massachusetts state troopers were the ones that were involved in the birth. And kudos to them for stepping up and using their more limited medical training, but certainly training nonetheless and providing care until EMS could arrive. And just want to point this out. You know, when you have something like this happen in your community, you should extend a congratulations and a thank you to members of other aspects of the emergency services system who provide a service that makes our jobs easier. You know, and this could have been a lot worse if there was no one there to help this woman with this process and help her in case there was an issue with her baby after birth. You know, certainly childbirth is a natural occurrence. I know that a lot of my nurse midwife friends would say that you don't necessarily have to have someone right there. It can happen all on its own. But certainly assistance is always appreciated in any of these types of situations. And we all know how these things can go bad. So having qualified people with some level of training there to get things started is important. And it makes our jobs easier ultimately when we have that kind of assistance riding alongside us or riding nearby that we can call on when needed. So again, kudos to these two Massachusetts state troopers for a job well done. And next time you see something like this happen in your community, don't forget to say congratulations and thanks. Moving right along and looking at the next article here. Another nice story this week. I think it's going to be Happy EMS Week this week on the news because there's just some good things being discussed here. And this is a story of a New York paramedic, EMT, who saved a boy's life 19 years ago and has been really an important aspect of that family's life ever since. He has stayed up with what's going on in that boy's life. The boy just graduated from college, and the paramedic was there to attend his college graduation party 19 years later, and that's exciting. The paramedic inspired the mom to become a nurse and go and get the training necessary to become a nurse, and so the impact we have, you can't really know where it's going to lead. And so I think this is an amazing story. I want you to find this in the show notes and read this story and think about this type of story as it relates to every single patient you have. Even the non-critical patients, we have an impact on their lives and on their families' lives through our professionalism, through our calm demeanor, through the way that we come in and help them deal with what they think is the worst day of their lives. They've called 911 and they want assistance. And we can adjust and help with the way that they respond to future interactions with the emergency services system simply because of the way we've acted in their time of need. And of course, we can have a long-standing impact on people's lives through our interactions and through the ways we might follow up with people in our community who have used our services. And that's what it's all about, folks. You know, if you're in this job because it's just a paycheck, well, you know, you can be an okay EMT and an okay paramedic by being a guy who just comes in and gets a paycheck and does a job and leaves. But really, I have to say that if you really want to be a true healthcare provider, you have to look on this as a calling, on something that is more than just a job. And I hope that you do. And I hope that you see through articles like this just the amazing ways we touch people in ways that no one else outside of this type of business, and I include paramedics, EMTs, police officers, firefighters in that category, that we just have a way and an opportunity to help people in ways that no one else can. And if you haven't seen that yet, I hope that you will soon, and that it will have a positive impact on your lives, because I think it will make you a better provider by thinking about these types of long-term consequences of everything you do, large and small, in the back of your ambulance. Finally, a story about a brand new rookie EMT. Back in the beginning of the month at a 4th of July parade, saw a man collapse and leapt in and began providing CPR immediately to that individual. Now, okay, wait a minute. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Isn't that what we're trained to do? Well, yeah, but you know what? When there's a save, when there's a dramatic rescue like that, and the individual ends up surviving because of it, well, guess what, folks? That's a plus, and we should be raising that person up for quick thinking, for jumping in and doing high-quality CPR, because you know what? People don't just survive cardiac arrest because any old person jumped in and did CPR. CPR has to be of a certain quality, and the better we do compressions, the better we adhere to the guidelines for providing consistent compressions, less time off the chest, better airway management, and more focused on providing that good negative pressure environment in the chest cavity to facilitate blood return and blood flow back to the heart and then out of the heart. All of those things make it just a perfect storm situation. And you can be the impetus for that by quick thought, quick reaction, and quick action. So I want to say kudos to this 22-year-old Staten Island volunteer firefighter who jumped in when he saw something occur and provided the impetus to start the process for a save in this cardiac arrest situation in the midst of what was a joyous occasion and ended up still being a joyous occasion because of this gentleman's quick thoughts and quick action. So Anthony Welberg, MedicCast kudos to you. If you listen to the show, hey, get in touch with me and let me know you follow the MedicCast. It'd be great to touch base with you. That's it for these news items. Again, I want to remind you that you should always follow up in the show notes on any of these news items or any of the links and information provided in the show. And again, you can find all of that over at medicast.com/blog. Right there at the top of the page, click the show notes link and you will be taken to the page with all of the episodes listed out. Find the one you want and you'll find links to this news item or any other news item you're looking for in the show notes here at medicast.com/blog. Time now for this week's tip of the week. And this week's segment, we're going to be talking with Elisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. Lisa back to join us with another segment. These segments are recorded earlier, so if you're watching the video version of the MedicCast over at MedicCast blog, then you will, of course, not see Lisa's face or see my actual video of this recording. That's because we record these ahead of time, and this was back before we started doing video of the episodes here on the MedicCast. So I will move on into that audio segment. I'll put a picture up here to keep you busy while you're listening, and we'll be back with the video to finalize the show. Of course, if you're listening to the audio podcast version of this, if you want to find the videos of the MedicCast or the short commentary MedicCast TV, you can find all of that. Just go to the link medicast.tv and you'll find all of those episodes over there. This week's tip of the week is going to be looking at a segment from Lisa Booz, the Maryland Poison Center, and this is our Tox Tidbit segment we do about every month or so. So, hi Lisa, what are we going to be talking about this month?
Hi, Jamie. Well, just imagine this. You have a patient with no pills, no pill bottles, no household products laying around, no notes, no idea what's going on with the patient. At times, EMS providers and emergency department staff are confronted with patients like this, patients who are ill and there's not a clear diagnosis. In some cases, the illness can be attributed to a medical problem, and then in others, a toxicological cause should be considered. So how do we figure out what it is that's the cause if we're talking about maybe a poisoning or an overdose? Well, as usual, with any type of medical complication or overdose or poisoning, the assessment of the patient begins by actually looking at a combination of information. So you want to look at the history, you look at the vital signs, and then you do also a physical examination and look at that and kind of put the pieces together. There are toxic syndromes. We also call them toxidromes. And these are groups of signs and symptoms that might suggest certain types of drugs or chemicals as the cause. Looking at the vital signs and looking at symptoms involving maybe the central nervous system, the gastrointestinal system, the eyes, the skin, mucous membranes, and genitourinary system can provide clues to the origin of the patient's illness if it is in fact due to a drug or a poison. Now, there are four primary toxidromes that healthcare providers should be familiar with. And they are the anticholinergic toxidrome, cholinergic, opioid, and also the sympathomimetic or stimulant toxidrome. The anticholinergic toxidrome is a commonly seen toxidrome, and it results from the blockade of muscarinic receptors in mainly the periphery, but also in the central nervous system. Now, an easy way of remembering this anticholinergic toxidrome is by remembering this mnemonic: mad as a hatter, hot as a hare, dry as a bone, red as a beet, and blind as a bat. So patients might be agitated, and they might have seizures, or they can sometimes be lethargic or hallucinating. The skin is dry, the skin's flushed and warm, and pupils are dilated. They have decreased bowel sounds, and usually they have urinary retention. Vital sign changes can include tachycardia, hypertension, and hyperthermia. So drugs that are anticholinergics include atropine, that's sort of the classic anticholinergic drug, antihistamines like diphenhydramine, some antipsychotic agents, cyclic antidepressants, some drugs for Parkinson's disease, GI antispasmodics, and also some bladder control meds. There's a plant called Jimson weed that grows pretty much throughout the United States, and that contains alkaloids that are very strong anticholinergics. The plant is often abused, usually by teenagers, for hallucinogenic purposes. And a lot of patients will come into emergency departments with this classic toxidrome. It's a young teenager, and we suspect they've been abusing something, and quite frequently it turns out to be Jimson weed. The cholinergic toxidrome occurs from the inhibition of an enzyme called acetylcholinesterase. Now, that's an enzyme that breaks down acetylcholine. And as a result, you get an accumulation of acetylcholine. As you would expect, the signs and symptoms are for the most part opposite of those of what you would see with the anticholinergic toxidrome. And patients actually exhibit what we call sludge symptoms. And a lot of EMS providers and ED staff are a little bit familiar with these sludge symptoms. The sludge mnemonic helps us to remember what to expect. S is for salivation, L is for lacrimation, U is urination, D is diarrhea, G is gastrointestinal distress or complaints, and E is emesis. Also, patients can be confused, they can be hypothermic, and they can have constricted pupils. If patients have severe symptoms, they're often what we call the killer bees: bronchorrhea, bronchospasm, and bradycardia. Cholinergic drugs include those used for glaucoma and for Alzheimer's disease, but in fact, the most common causes of the cholinergic toxidrome that poison centers hear about are from organophosphate and carbamate insecticide exposures, whether it's a topical exposure or inhalation or ingestion of these insecticides, you will get this cholinergic toxidrome. Both of these insecticides cause the typical cholinergic toxidrome, but don't rely too much on the heart rate with the insecticides because they also bind to other receptors called nicotinic receptors, and that can result in tachycardia instead of bradycardia. There's another class of chemicals that causes the cholinergic toxidrome that unfortunately we need to consider and we need to remember, and that's the nerve agents that might be involved in a chemical weapons incident. Another commonly seen toxidrome is the opioid toxidrome, and that's caused by opioids such as codeine, morphine, heroin, oxycodone, hydrocodone, fentanyl, and there are many others. You just really need to remember three clinical effects to raise suspicion of an opioid exposure: lethargy, maybe progressing to coma, respiratory depression, and constricted pupils. Patients can exhibit other symptoms, though, depending on what opioid it was that they were ingesting or injecting or exposed to. And they may see bradycardia, hypotension, hypothermia, and pulmonary edema. Now, most EMS providers and ED healthcare providers are really familiar with the effects of opioids, particularly the constricted pupils. You know, they're taught if you see constricted pupils and the patient is sleepy, maybe the respiration's a little depressed, then it's probably an opioid. But don't let the absence of the constricted pupils point you in a different direction. It's quite possible for patients to have dilated pupils if they use or ingest other drugs like cocaine or if they're hypoxic. The sympathomimetic or the stimulant toxidrome is another commonly seen toxidrome, and that follows exposure to drugs such as amphetamines, cocaine, caffeine, over-the-counter decongestants, some of the dietary supplements, and also beta agonists like albuterol. Patients are usually quite agitated, and they often have tachycardia, hypertension. They may have seizures, hyperthermia, and they have dilated pupils. Now, it sounds a lot like the anticholinergic toxidrome, but the difference is with the sympathomimetic or stimulant toxidrome, they usually have hyperactive bowel sounds instead of diminished bowel sounds, and they're usually sweaty instead of having real dry skin and mucous membranes. Those of us who work in poison centers are trained from the start, really, to recognize these toxidromes in order to help diagnose and recommend the appropriate treatment for poisonings and overdoses. So it would really be a good idea in any type of poisoning or overdose situation, but also when you don't know what's going on, to call the local poison center for help. Might be an exposure to a toxin or a drug, and just by giving us the signs and symptoms for these particular patients, we might be able to diagnose at least the group of drugs that this patient might have been exposed to. The poison center number, no matter where you are in the United States, is 1-800-222-1222.
And it's really important, just as you just pointed out, that the poison center is not just a resource for you when you have a known agent or even a suspected agent, but when you have a patient that's got something going on for an unknown cause, it may be worth your while to take a few moments, call into the poison center, and use them as an additional resource.
That's right. And it's not just these particular toxidromes. Poison centers have diagnosed cyanide exposures just based on signs and symptoms in lab tests, for example, like a metabolic acidosis combined with other symptoms. We often diagnose antifreeze ingestions just based on some lab results and also the signs and symptoms. So, quite frequently we are called about unknown exposures, and we are able to help and at least narrow down what the exposure might have been to, if not figuring out exactly what it was that they were exposed to.
Well, Lisa, as always, thank you very much for taking the time to share this with our listeners, and we'll catch up with you for your next segment.
All right, Jamie, thanks.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank Lisa Booz again for taking the time to share her knowledge with us and talk about toxicology issues here on the MedicCast. Again, you can find more about what's going on in toxicology and get signed up for the Maryland Poison Center's Tox Tidbit newsletter. You can find all of that over at mdpoison.com. And you don't have to be in the state of Maryland or even the United States to get access to that. They'll just send you an email when the next Tox Tidbit is posted. You go over to the link and it will provide you a downloadable one-page PDF file. It's the beautiful thing about their Tox Tidbits newsletter. It's a beautiful piece of paper to just print out and hang up in your station that provides a great little short piece of information about a certain toxicology subject. So you should definitely sign up for the Tox Tidbit newsletter, and you can actually, in that same area, go back and look at all of the past newsletter segments. So you can print them all out and put them in a little booklet if you want to and have them available. All that's available at mdpoison.com. Of course, you can find all of the links to additional resources, including the Maryland Poison Center and some other tidbit links related to this week's tip of the week, over at the MedicCast blog in the show notes area. Again, mediccast.com/blog, and you'll find all of the links to this episode's links in the show notes link at the top of the page. I want to encourage you to get back in touch with me. So leave a comment on the show notes page if you liked this episode and you're checking it out over at the site. There's a link at the top and the bottom of the page. Just click on that and go ahead and share your thoughts right there on the MedicCast site for myself and all the other viewers to check out. You can also always shoot me an email, podmedic@mac.com. I will get back to you, so send me those emails in with comments and suggestions, corrections. Of course, don't forget the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC, and call in and check in here on the MedicCast voicemail line. Love to hear from you, and we haven't had a voicemail call in a while, so I'm looking forward to hearing from the rest of you here soon. That's going to close things out. I do want to remind you, follow the MedicCast over on Facebook, facebook.com/MedicCast. Just click that like button at the top of the page and you'll be a follower of the MedicCast fan page there. And of course, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook personally under the handle PodMedic. So I look forward to hearing from you and getting in touch with you in those social media avenues as well. That's it for me. I'll close out the show with some music from our old long-standing supporter here of podcasting in general, Matthew Ebel, E-B-E-L. And you can find Matthew's music at MatthewEbel.com. And I would urge you to check out his link in the show notes, or you can also find a link directly to his music over on iTunes. So you can check that out. And if you like some of the songs there, go ahead and buy a few of them. It's a great way to show your support. Matthew has great songs. You've heard them here if you've been listening to the show in the past. And we'll go ahead and pick up his song, An Ordinary Guy. You know, a lot of us are ordinary guys here in EMS. And yet, you know what? We are extraordinary because we go out and do the jobs that a lot of other people don't do. So kudos to you. Here's Matthew Ebel's An Ordinary Guy. I'll be back again next week, every Sunday night, putting out a new episode of the MedicCast available for you right away, first thing Monday morning when you roll out the beginning of the week. That's it. I want to remind all of you, importantly, scene safety, BSI.
So here's a glimpse of my perception. I think you're way above my station. But I can't shake my intention to make a shameless proposition. But if I try to take some action, I just might meet your satisfaction, which could lead to some affection, which might lead to an erection of some new substantial section of my segmented attention. So I feel that I should mention I'm about due for some expansion. So I'll try to find some passion, but my software keeps on crashing. I lock up fast and then I'm staring at your ass and I'm just an ordinary guy. I pay my bills on time. I take my pills with wine. I'm just an ordinary guy. Recycle all my trash. I got my secret stash. Grass and cash. I'm just an ordinary guy. I see you in the corner texting. I hope my words don't come out vexing. And this may sound a bit perplexing. The way you hold that phone is sexy. I might have overstepped my boundary, but I swear you'll be glad you found me. I sound astounded cause you seem chic, and yet you might just be my dream geek. So how about this, we meet at your place, cause mine's running out of floor space. My Roomba seems to have been misplaced, and now it's uglier than my space in my apartment, but that's alright. We could just stay up till daylight. We'll grab a bite and then I'll Twitter you all night. Cause I'm just an old
to ease the pain. I'm just an ordinary guy. I watch Dancing with the Stars. I hate going to bars, and I own an ugly car. I'm just an ordinary guy. I always sucked at math. I hate the grapes of wrath. I'm not a psychopath. I'm just an ordinary guy. I get sick when